As I looked, thrones were set in place, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So our gospel this morning is from John chapter 18, verses 33 to 37, and it's on page 1087 of the Church Bibles. John chapter 18, verses 33 to 37. So hear the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to John. Glory to you, O Lord. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus, and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked, "or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "It was your people and your chief priests who handed you over to me. What is it you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You are right in saying I am a king. In fact, for this reason I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." This is the gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Do sit down. One of the things that amused and annoyed me about the film The Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson was that scene in which, if I remember right, Pilate certainly talked in Latin. I'm pretty sure Jesus talked back to him in Latin too, which is historically very unlikely. But that's the problem of a purist who knows about ancient history going to see films which are meant to be entertainment. Ask Heather about the way I destroyed Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves for her. But I want to preach on Daniel chapter 7. And I'm not just going to preach on the verses selected for us in the lectionary, but the whole of Daniel 7. So you might like to open page 892. Because we're going to look at the bits which I think rightly the Church of England, that the common lectionary leaves out, but which hundreds of thousands of scribblers down the centuries have loved to dwell on, and that is the beasts pictured on the screen. Because people who love to dwell on the future and what it may hold delight in Revelation and Daniel as two particular books which are full of the possibility of endless speculation. And I haven't bothered to do it, but I think if you went on the internet and tried to find what these chapters are about, you would find endless suggestions as to what Daniel 7 means. Here's a sort of summary for those of you who aren't looking it up, or those of you who've got it open in front of you, of the beasts which appear. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. You see, I'm missing bits out if you've got it open. And there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard. And there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. Remember that? It had 10 horns. So what are these beasts? What is this all about? Well, God tells Daniel, Daniel tells us. So he told me, this is the Son of Man actually, tells Daniel, and gave me the interpretation of these things. The four great beasts are four kingdoms that will rise from the earth. Aha! So, crossword lovers, Sudoku solvers, we've got a puzzle. We've got four kingdoms, we've got four beasts. What are they? Well, commentators are astonishingly almost all agreed that the lion represents Babylon, because the clues that Daniel drops make it pretty clear that he's thinking, when he talks about the lion with wings, as Babylon, the great world power before his time, of his time. There's the majority view has been over the centuries that the Medes and the Persians represent the bear. That Greece represented the leopard, and that the terrifying beast with the ten horns was Rome. But the problem came in that in the vision Daniel has, the beasts are all destroyed one after the other, or they lose their power, they lose their authority. And when the Roman Empire fell, who's the beast then? Because God isn't reigning and ruling, and the kingdom hasn't come in its finality, so who's the beast? So there grew up a tradition, particularly amongst those opposed to the papacy, Rome. Similar sort of thing, isn't it? Rome, it's the papacy. The papacy is the fourth beast. And people who objected to Rome's rule, and particularly the Protestants, said, it's obvious. Now, of course, the Roman Catholic Church wasn't too thrilled about this. So in the Reformation, they said, no, the fourth beast is Germany, the home of Luther, the home of discord, the place that's tearing the world apart. Luther himself thought it was probably the Turks who threatened to invade Europe at that time and, as they saw it, destroy civilization. So different eras look at these beasts and interpret in the light of their own history. Until, I'm leaving out great chunks, in the 1970s, it became the European Union. 10 horns, 10 nations, based around the Treaty of Rome. It was obvious. Until the European Union expanded and went to more than 10 nations. Now 25, heading towards 27. So what could it be? So the conspiracy theories alter their conspiracies to adjust the situation. Well, probably, this is a popular one at the moment, it's going to be a sort of 10-nation confederacy based around the European Union. So they were thrilled, actually, when there was the chance that there'd be a two-speed Europe, you know, and 10 would split off, and that would prove it. And those who want to really hedge their bets say, well, it's some sort of 10-nation confederacy based probably around Rome, but with perhaps other nations joining in. In other words, we haven't a clue. Bible scholars say, well, actually, probably what Daniel, the writer of Daniel, meant in his time, when you look at all the clues that he gives, is it's Babylon, it's the Medes, then the Persians as a separate beast, and then Greece, actually. He's not thinking ahead to Rome because he's living in his own time. And there were 10 kings who arose. Alexander the Great was one of them. And there was a particularly nasty one, if you're a Jew, called Antiochus Epiphanes, who threatened to destroy Israel. And he was seen as the last and loudest horn that rose up against God. But the problem with all this theory, fascinating though it may be to people who enjoy conspiracies and enjoy fantasy, writing about all sorts of possibilities that might be, is that they miss the point of Daniel's vision. They spend all their time looking at the detail and missing the big picture, which, and you don't often hear me say this, the lectionary, I think, has got it absolutely right. Because the point of Daniel's vision is to see that God is above all this. He stands over all this. He is enthroned in the heavens, and he looks down and laughs at what's going on with these kingdoms. They look so frightening, they look so terrifying, but God is sovereign and reigns over all. The Ancient of Days rules, his throne flaming with fire, a river of fire coming before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated and the books were opened. This is Daniel's point. Don't be scared by the beasts that arise. Don't be worried by the kingdoms that threaten. God is sovereign. God rules. God reigns. Lift your eyes and see his glory. It's a similar sort of picture to Psalm 2:2-5, where the writer says, the kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath. where our eyes should be fixed. That's where the focus lies. Because the kingdoms will be destroyed. The beasts will come to an end. Continuing in Daniel 7. Then I continued to watch. This is the bit between those two readings that we had. Then I continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority but were allowed to live for a period of time. The beasts will be destroyed. The kingdoms will be neutered because God rules. God reigns. He is so much greater. And then to God, before God comes, this mysterious figure. In my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was what, like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. Very important. There was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. What's a son of man? Well, in Hebrew language, it means anyone, every man, an ordinary kind of figure, a representative human. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Who is this mysterious figure, this Son of Man, who comes before God? Well, again, the Bible commentators like to think about this. They say, is it representative Israel? Is it an angelic figure? Is it the Messiah? Christians and Jews down the centuries have said it's the Messiah. Well, it seems to me that the problem with being representative Israel or anything other than someone who is and has all the authority of God is it says all peoples, nations, and men of every language worshipped him. And that word, that verb, is only ever used in the Hebrew Bible towards God. So whoever this is, they're due worship as God is due worship. So it seems to me Israel is ruled out. Any human ruler is ruled out. Any angelic being is ruled out. When someone tries to worship angels in the Bible, they say, no, 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 don't do that. Worship only God. And so we have always understood that this is God coming in a human form into his world, predicted by Daniel long, long, long before Jesus ever came. And who endorsed that view? Well, Jesus did, actually. Because in Mark chapter 13, which was, if you remember, our Bible reading last week, although this is a bit later in that chapter, Jesus said, at that time, men will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great glory, sorry, power and glory. Do you remember? Clouds? Ah, yes. Jesus is consciously quoting Daniel and saying the Son of Man, which is the way he talked about himself, will come to God on the clouds. So this, most of us have grown up with the idea this is about the second coming and Jesus coming back. It's not. It's about Jesus being enthroned in glory and honor when he goes to the Father after he is crucified or when he rises from the dead. Not quite sure about that, I presume, when he rises. But it's when he reclaims the authority that is rightfully his from the beginning of the world. Jesus says, this is to his disciples just before his arrest and death, don't worry. I'm going to the Father. I'm going to reclaim the glory and the honor and the power that was rightly mine. And then I'll gather my people to me. I'll gather the people from east and west and north and south. And you, my followers, you'll be with me in that glorious kingdom, in that heavenly realm. Just as he says to the thief who's dying on the cross, today you'll be with me in paradise. When the thief says, remember me when you come into your kingdom. So Jesus says, that's me in Daniel. We say, that's Jesus in Daniel. And it's pretty much the same sort of thing as he's saying to Pilate in our gospel reading. My kingdom's not of this world. My kingdom is from another place. For this reason I was born and for this reason I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me. I have a kingdom. You can't destroy the kingdom. You can destroy me. Pilate, you can kill me. But the kingdom will go on. And Jesus acts as the true king in the face of Pilate, saying, oh, what's truth? The cynical politician. Now, just take all that for a minute and think, who wrote these things? When Daniel wrote this glorious vision of God enthroned in power and glory and the Son of Man coming before him to attain the throne, how was Israel a great superpower? No, Israel was crushed by the might of the Greeks, as we've thought earlier. They were a tiny, insignificant, unimportant nation with no great aspirations to an empire, just hoping to cling on to their own land. And yet, with the eyes of faith, with the eyes of prophecy, Daniel sees God's greatness and God's glory. When Mark and John wrote, Rome was all-powerful. Rome had a worldwide empire, the like of which had not been ever seen before and would not be seen for thousands of years. They ruled most of the known world. With military precision and military might, they held the captive peoples down, including the people of Israel. And within that system, the Christians were a tiny, unimportant, oppressed and persecuted minority. But with the eyes of faith, Mark saw, with the eyes of faith, John saw what Jesus had seen, that God rules and God reigns, and Jesus rules and reigns with him. And we will rule and reign with him too. Never mind at the moment we're hiding in catacombs. This is one of the early church meeting places underground in Rome, where they scratch their messages and their hidden secret symbols on the wall. The anchor, a symbol of Jesus. The fish, a symbol of Jesus. They were in fear of their lives constantly. But they knew that God ruled and God reigned, and that he would one day take them to be with him in that powerful, glorious kingdom. And their faith was completely justified and rewarded. Because astonishingly, just a couple of centuries later, Constantine became a Christian and the Roman Empire acknowledged Christianity as its faith. And just another 150 odd years later, Rome fell. The Roman Empire was no more. And that great kingdom, whether it was the fourth beast or just another beast, fell and was no more and was finished, never to rise. The eyes of faith were right. And so, what about us to finish off? Well, it seems to me that we need to hear the message too. That if the church seems weak and powerless, we need to remember Daniel and his vision. We need to remember Mark and John and what Jesus says to us. He says, no, don't look at the beasts. Don't look at the kingdoms. Look up and see the Son of Man coming to the Ancient of Days, ruling in power and authority. And remember, that's the reality that's going on behind the scenes. Remember that. And actually, the church today, in our nation today, has an awful lot more influence than it ever had in the days of Mark and John. We still have freedom. We still have the opportunity to preach the gospel. We still have respect. Let's use it. Make the most of it. And secondly, and finally, it reminds me that God rules over all empires. And kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall, but the kingdom of God endures. The Roman Empire rose and fell. The British Empire rose and fell. Germany's Third Reich, that was going to last 1,000 years, lasted 12. The Soviet Empire, to many people's amazement, 20 years ago, just collapsed and crumbled and fell apart. Because kingdoms that set themselves against God cannot last, cannot stand. And at the moment, we generally live in a kind of American empire. It's an empire not of domination by political power, but of consumer power, of the gods of secularism and materialism and individualism and consumerism, which most of us are actually signed up, paid up members, even if we don't like to acknowledge it. I wondered at great length what pictures to put up here. Some golden arches, perhaps. Picture of Wall Street. You know, there are so many ways in which there is an empire of which we are called to be the counterculture, to remember that God is enthroned, that God rules, that God reigns, and that no kingdom will last, not the kingdom of, no empire, not the British Empire, not the Roman Empire, and not the empire of individualism, consumerism, materialism, secularism, atheism. None of them will last. God alone rules and reigns. Remember that in terms of our nation. Remember that in terms of our church. Remember it in terms of your own life. When there seem beasts that arise against you, over which you have no power. God rules, God reigns. That is Daniel's glorious image. And it's an image which is true for us today.
Thank you, Simon. Let's stand and say the creed together. Christ Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is